Welcome to the Unsweetened SIO podcast. My name is Siobhan Harris. I am a certified integrative nutrition health coach and the founder of unsweetenedsio.com. I gave up all sugar and all flour on January 13th, 2018, and am finally free of my addiction. My mission is to help other sugar addicts find their path to freedom and live the sweet life without sugar. Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 151 and the season 5 premiere of Unsweetened SIO, the podcast. And I am just incredibly excited about today's guest. Can't have imagined a better opener for this season. Esther is a pioneer in the field of food addiction treatment. Once an opera singer and opera teacher, Esther was battling food addiction for most of her adult life until she discovered a 12-step program that changed her life. Once in recovery, she opened one of the first food addiction treatment programs in the world. The MFM program in Iceland has treated many people. Some of them had tried multiple diets and even surgery in an attempt to live a healthier life. Esther's program gives them hope and the tools to achieve long-term recovery. Based on the 12 steps of AA, their success rate long-term is much higher than any other medical intervention. After establishing the treatment center, Esther realized that not only the patients needed help with food addiction, but also the professionals. She then founded InFACT, an international training program for any type of professional willing to learn about food addiction and how to help those suffering with it. The 6-month online course is open to all, and it gives you an excellent evidence-based knowledge on food addiction diagnosis and treatment. The list of lecturers is very impressive, from Nicole Avena to Robert Lustig, to experienced counselors on the field of food addiction like Phil Wardell. Also at the end of the course, attendees receive a food addiction professional certificate from the European Certification Board. On top of this impressive curriculum, Esther is also the executive director and chair of the Food Addiction Institute, an independent nonprofit organization whose mission is to support the healing of all food addicts, founded in 2005. So you can see why I'm so excited to have Esther here today. Welcome.
Well, thank you. I don't have to say anything else. You said it all.
I know. It's quite an impressive intro. And what I was saying to Esther before we started recording was I'm so excited to have her on because this season, season 5, I really want to share, the most feedback I get is from people that share their own stories of recovery. And I get so many people that email me and say, that was just so helpful. So this season 5 is really going to be more of a focus on hearing other people's tale of recovery. But Esther not only found her own recovery, but, you know, created a treatment center to help other food addicts. And then another program to help other people learn how to treat food addicts. So I just love how your journey has progressed. So I would love to start though at the beginning, if you just kind of let us all know, you know, your own kind of journey with food addiction and what led you to really know it was an addiction and that you needed help.
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. I'm just going to say I am a native of Iceland and have lived here most of my life, except when I've done school, and I've done quite a bit of work in US through the years. And I actually, when I, you know, in hindsight, I can see how I was a food addict from early childhood. But I wasn't obese or anything, but I'm coming from an era, I'm older. I am coming from an era where, you know, food was not as accessible as it is today. And, you know, one time I went into the store and I bought a soda and I drank it in the store. And my grandmother, she got so angry at me for doing such a thing, you know. But my grandmother was obese, and on my father's side, and my grandfather on my mother's side was also very obese, and that was not common in those years in Iceland. You know, most people would just slender. They would eat simple, you know, foods, meats and fish and potatoes and, you know, things like that. And it wasn't so bad. The food wasn't so bad. But of course, like everywhere, we started using more of the sugars and the starches and starchy foods and stuff. So those were the kind of foods that I would crave if I would get them, specifically starchy foods, and sugar not so much until later in life. So when I was about 16, I felt that I had gained weight, you know, and from a very early age, somebody had said to me when I was just starting to develop as a woman kind of thing, that I was gaining weight. And I immediately thought, oh, I'm like grandmother. If I'm gaining weight, I'm gonna be like my grandmother. And she could hardly move. She was so overweight. And so immediately it was something that I noticed and something that I really felt was a bad thing. And I started being worried about it, and then begun to think of ways how I could be thinner, even if I didn't need to be thinner at all at that time. And I did, and you know, what I did in my younger years was to go into severe, well, I would do raw foods, vegetarianism, you know, organic foods, and this is like a long time ago, you Zipan. I would be interested in doing health for me and be in a healthy body. You know, I have a spiritual wisdom soul in a healthy body. That was kind of my aim for life at that point. And the thing was that I ate only healthy foods, but I still could not keep the weight, and it kept creeping on. And specifically after I started the fasting and depriving myself of food to get rid of the extra, then the yo-yo kind of syndrome came on, and I was either restricting or binging. And I never got to throw up, fortunately. That's about the worst thing I could do. But I would do other things for, you know, bulimia. Like exercise and diuretics and stuff. And so I got caught in eating disorders when I was very young. And then obviously the key to it was the foods that I ate and that I would crave. And I could find them in healthy foods as anywhere else. It was in the honey, the raw sugar, the molasses, you know, the grinding the wheat, and making my own breads, and I'd eat a whole loaf. You know, I go crazy. And immediately at this point, even if I was eating so healthy, I was already a really bad food addict. And I wasn't a direct sugar addict. I was more a food addict. It was the food. And of course, it wasn't bad if the sugar was with it, but I didn't need that as much. And I you know, having become a clinician, I see that there is a difference with people that are just hardcore sugar addicts and people that are more the food addicts. There's differences there, but usually they come together at one point later in life, because this is a progressive disease. So, you know, just to go fast over, I kept, you know, I had a lot of willpower and strength to do, and I lost the weight again and again and again over the next 20 years. And I would restrict until I got to the right weight. and lose the weight. And I would, you know, at one time I ate one meal a week for 3.5 months. Got the weight down. Then I went, this was my last year at Indiana University Music School, and I was going back to Iceland, and it was Christmas, and I started eating, of course, you know, what else? And I had gained, like, you know, we do kilos in Iceland, so it was about 40 kilos. That's probably about 80, 90 pounds in 4 or 5 months. Lost it all. Gained more, lost more or less, gained more. That became, you know, the thing. And not only was the weight gain and the weight loss and the restricting and all the hardship of living that life, you know, never having the freedom of just being able to relax about eating and food. It was always an issue, and it became more and more so, and it started affecting my mood, and you know, I would isolate, and I would you know, become depressed and anxiety and fears, and you know, just in my own isolation, in my addiction, feeling I was probably the only one in the world having this problem. And so that went on for a long, long time. Now I would go to 12-step programs. I actually started pretty early on in Al-Anon because of family issues. And so that was a really good thing for me. It helped me a lot. Then I realized that there was a fellowship for food addiction. And so I went there. But in Iceland, I'm sorry to say, there's no recovery at all. And people were just there not knowing what to do with the food, and just thinking if they just go to meeting and maybe think about doing the 12-step work, they'd be okay. And they weren't, and me neither. So I was kind of lost the faith in that until I found another program. And because I'm anonymity, I'm not talking about the program, which once, but that was a program that had come just not so long ago in that time. It was in 2003 here in Iceland. And there, when I went to that meeting, that was the first time I saw recovery ever from the kind of disease that I have. And I look around when I came in there, I got so frustrated and angry because everybody there was thin, or at least less obese than as I. And I thought I was again gonna be in this one diet club of skinny ladies that were gonna tell me what to do. And I had tried all of that. I was not ready for that. But then when the first person spoke, I knew she was telling my story. She was really telling my story. And I tell you, I'm a drama queen a little bit. So I kind of broke down in that meeting and sobbed the whole meeting. It was just like, finally, I found a place of recovery. And I was willing at that point to do whatever it took. And I got a sponsor the day after and started my first day, February 8th, 2003. And so next February, I'm going to have 20 years of back-to-back abstinence. And when I got abstinent, I realized how depressed I had been. I didn't realize it until then. I was on the verge of suicide. I was so deeply depressed. After about a couple of hours, a couple of, I'm sorry, months on my plan, my food plan, abstinence food plan, I woke up one morning and it was something was very different. I wasn't depressed anymore, and I have not become depressed since, no matter what difficulties may have come, and some difficulties have come in my life. Life continues to happen, even if you stop using your substances. I have never become depressed. I've been sad and all kinds of emotions, but I've never been depressed since. And I also know now, because I'm a clinician as well, that the brain, when it, the tolerance happens within the brain and changes the brain biologically, it stops giving us the juice, the well-being juice, the dopamine juice. Just no, and we cannot not be depressed because there's just no feeling good hormones helping us be that. And so obviously, this kind of treatment that I got there spruced up my brain, and the new dopamine receptors started happening, and more I got to become this happy person again. And so that was one huge benefit. But the first thing that I noticed was just like the same day I started, it was so weird. It was like all of a sudden I felt peace in my mind and in my body. The obsession was gone immediately when I stopped eating the foods that trigger my pleasure centers. I just stopped, and I immediately it worked. And my obsession, my mental obsession, the obsessive mind, what am I going to have now, what not to have, all of that was gone. And not only just the toward food, but also toward just so many other issues that I had been kind of my mental obsessions were just like severe, around so many issues, and it all kind of just relaxed, and there was peace in my mind. Oh my God, that was something incredible. It took me a while to work on my control issues because I thought I knew better, because I was like the person that knew everything about diet in Iceland, and about healthy diet. People would come to me and say, "Asta, what should I do?" And when I saw my abstinence plan, I thought it was, "What? This is not what I do." But the thing was that the women that were helping me, they had recovery, and I didn't. So I decided to let go and surrender to it, for a week first, and then of course it's been 19 years and like 7 months almost, at this point. So that's a little bit about my story. I really knew, I'm just gonna say that I needed a lot of help. I needed to do the work because yes, the food, I needed to let go of my food, but then I needed to work on my addiction. And somehow I had gotten that. And I had been told that the 12-step work would help me with that. And I decided to trust it. Wasn't sure it was going to work, of course. How would I know? I'd never really done it. But when I did, everything that I had been doing for so many years, like all my yoga practices, my meditation practices, my running around finding gurus to work on my emotional issues, my mental issues, all of that had never worked before, somehow just came together in the process of going through the 12-step work from the big book. And it changed my life. It seriously changed my life. And I've not changed back ever since. So I personally have the story of this, and the grace of having had that kind of a change in my life. And I know today what to do in order to keep my life happy. and productive, and to deal with whatever comes up in the day. And some days can be hard, like with everybody, but I also know that they will pass, and have the tools to work through. So that's a little bit about my story.
That is incredible. Thank you so much for sharing. And oh my gosh, congratulations on almost 20 years now of abstinence and not looking back. You know, once you found, like you said, it all kind of clicked into place with you. And I love that you said now you have the tools. You know, life still happens. You know, I say that all the time, but unfortunately, it's not like you're abstinent and then life becomes perfect. You know, there's still going to be those ups and downs, but we're just so much better equipped to deal with them.
Yes.
So yeah, I think a lot of people listening just will resonate with so much of your story. And I'm just curious, then once you kind of found the 12-step program that worked for you, and then, you know, started immediately with that peace in your mind and body with the obsessions like just disappearing. That must have just been, you know, again, right there, you probably were like, yes, this is it. But how then did you start and decide to create, you know, a treatment program? Like how did you take that next step then? Was it like, okay, I've helped myself, I really want to help other people now? Or what, you know, what kind of led to creating the MFM program?
So thank you for that question, Sipan. I actually immediately knew that once I found it, that I had a passion to do something more with it. And of course, I knew that I needed to get recovery before I could do anything for other people. And so I did practice a lot of 12-step work, supporting others within the 12-step programs, and got a lot of recovery for myself through that. But and I was actually running a big music school here in Iceland at that point. And I just knew it was time for me to let go of that profession. And it was very interesting, but I was done. I was done. And I wanted to go into the profession of treatment for people with food addiction and sugar addiction, because I know that if I had had screening and assessing and, proper diagnosis for my disease, and then the help, I don't think I would have had to go through so many years of suffering before I would have gotten recovery, you see. So I wanted, and I started looking for what's out there for food addiction treatment, and it was not much at all. And I found a few, and I contacted everybody that I could find on what might be the next steps for me to do, and what I could study. There was at that point no school teaching really. The only thing I could find for that was the ACORN training course, which was excellent. And I did a 3-year training with the ACORN then, which is SHIFT now, with Phil Verdell and Mary Fushi, his wife. And so we became kind of cooperators, and they'd come to Iceland, work with me. I'd come to US, work with them, and we have advanced from that cooperation quite a bit in SHIFT. So I did that, and I also pretty soon joined the Food Addiction Institute, which Phil Verdell has had established at that time. So the people that were pioneers basically in the treatment field kind of got together in the Food Addiction Institute for the most part. And but before that happened, I went into addiction counseling and got a diploma in addiction counseling and supervision here in Iceland. And going through that course gave me the tools to start something as a addiction counselor. And so I did. I didn't really know how to do much, but I had gotten some studying and learning there. And then I had supervision, and then I more supervision with Phil and Mary on food addiction. So it was more on the addiction here with the school, and then on the food addiction side with them. So as I started, it was first private sessions, but very fast it evolved into seminar-based outpatient treatment. And that's what we've been doing there for like more than 16 years now, almost 17 years, that we've been offering treatment, seminar-based outpatient treatment. But it has a lot of support to it, education, support and help to get abstinent. The abstinence plan is like a detox from all the foods and sugars that can possibly trigger your pleasure centers, and daily support with food plan, and then education on the disease. And then guidelines on the treatment going forward. And we usually do like 4 to 6 months with each group, and depending, and some people come again and again and do them again to just deepen their work, and then of course private sessions for deeper work and trauma work and stuff like that. We've treated about around 3,000 people so far here in Iceland, and we have actually very good success rate. In the first year is about 80% success rate. That means that people are abstinent after the year, and for the most part. And that is incredible, really, you know. But we try to give the best guidance possible, and do this in a professional way to the best of our abilities.
And did you kind of pull on the knowledge not only from, the addiction counseling, that you earned, but also just your own experience as far as what you felt was really critical to getting people better? Like, did you kind of, combine what really worked for you as well? Because you're kind of naming some different components. I think some people, when they think about addiction, probably of any kind, is just getting off the substance and then that's it. But that's just,
Yes.
a small part of it. So yeah, how did you kind of create the other part of that to make sure they're really getting that full healing to really set them up for the success rate that you have?
So, yes, I think everybody that has had recovery like what I had had, what at least what it gives you is that the knowledge that that this is possible. And I can say to people, like I am abstinent now for 20 years almost. And people follow up on me from year to year to year. The first years they didn't believe that it would be possible, and now they know that it is possible. And I'm kind of a public figure a little bit here in Iceland, so a lot of people kind of have follow up on it. So that is important for people to know that abstinence is possible, and to have recovery is possible from this disease. Because coming from a diet mentality, the diet always ends. But what we're doing in treatment is helping people understand that this is a way of life. This is a way of changing. If you want a different life, you need to change. And that is supporting the person to change. Now, I actually, when I started off and I was looking for treatments that worked, that I saw that had good success rates, that was pretty much 12-step facilitated treatments. And so I decided very early on that that was something that I wanted to put emphasis on. And so I've done that and developed the treatment around working therapeutically within the treatment, the steps. That is, and you know, but in the beginning, I needed to define, distinguish between the professional working with my client and me as a person that had gotten recovery in a 12-step program. So it was a little complicated, especially when I was really just learning the differences. And there is difference. There's a difference, you know, as a treatment facilitator, you know, your story shouldn't come in that much, you know. Of course, you know, any story is very important in treatment, like anywhere, because as you said before, you know, it's the stories that catch people's ears. And so we need those. But we also need to be supporting a person and teaching the person to get the kind of knowledge and to support then the person to use the knowledge as a professional. And that's a whole nother dimension of doing it. And with this, I'm not saying diminishing the effect of the 12-step programs, which I, you know, I just like a gift to this universe, I think. And you know, people go there. They don't necessarily go there in the beginning in the treatment. We kind of get them into the treatment, teaching the ropes, and then they start going there and hopefully continuing there as a support. Because for recovery, for many, you know, at least the ones that are like late stage food addicts, they would need that kind of support in their lives. Yeah, so it is, yes, I draw from my own experience, and I think everybody will do that, but it is not necessarily what I base the treatment on, you see. Then there is the treatment. And yeah.
It's very, good to distinguish those. So I'm curious too, as people are listening, they're probably amazed that you have almost 20 years, and especially a lot of people that listen are still struggling, or maybe just have a little bit of abstinence behind their belt, and or maybe did get abstinent for a period of time and then lose it and then come back to it. So I'm curious of what kind of you have found to be what really keeps you on track, and continue to be abstinent even in those times. I know you talked about some of your tools, but I'm sure people would really kind of like to hear what has kept you in recovery all these years, when so many people have a really hard time staying abstinent.
Yeah. So if I'm coming just from my own recovery site, and I'm happy to talk about that, I know that the kind of abstinence program that I am on, it for me is something that I absolutely need. It does not have a lot of starches in it. That's kind of where my weaknesses are. You know, there's a lot of vegetables and a lot of meats and fish and eggs and milk products and fats and you know just food, real food. And I weigh and measure my food, so I know I always get enough and never too much. And you know the portion for me is you know, it's something that I get support from, and if it needs to change, you know, that needs to happen with a sponsor or somebody, a treatment facilitator maybe. And so that is very secure. And my daily, you know, I eat my meals, weighed and measured meals throughout the day, with a certain intervals, and my blood sugar levels, my hormonal levels, all is in good, very stable. So that is a base. That needs to happen. People cannot just not eat sugar and not eat enough. We need a lot of food, and we need to support to know the portion sizes of what to eat in order to keep healthy weight, which is very important because that's part of being healthy and feeling good about yourself, is that you get to be at goal weight. So that's one part of the recovery, and that really is there and needs to be there, stable. And then there are two components that need to happen. One is that for recovery. One is support. If I have support with others that know why I am doing what I do, then and we reach out to each other and support each other with that, then my brain gets washed in a right fashion, because if I were only out there with everybody just eating whatever and never with the people that know why I need to eat the way I need, then my brain would be washed in a bad way. It would be filled with, no, this is too extreme. No, you can have a little, you start tomorrow, and all of this. My mind will go there eventually. So the support is for us to be together in the support of abstinence. So that's one point that is very important. And then the other is to have some kind of a program, whether it's a 12-step program, if you find something different, good for you. I know it's possible within the 12-step programs. That is like a program of recovery for addictions. It's just, that's what it is. And you do the work that is presented there, you will get, you will learn to become aware. You become aware of your body, you become aware of your mind, you become aware of your emotions, and you get tools to deal with all of this. And you learn to just put it in simple terms. You learn to feel good and comfortable in your own skin. And that's where we want to be. And we want to be happy, smiling, and comfortable in our own skin. And we don't want to be caught up in emotional havoc. We can't have our emotions take us over and just rule the whole days and weeks and weeks. Of course, when we go through grief and stuff like that, that's kind of what happens. I'm not saying disregard our emotions. I'm absolutely not saying that. But there are things like that that we need to learn to, we need to learn to deal with, what has happened to us in the past, the traumas. Everybody has trauma that we need to deal with, and one point or the other. And that needs to kind of happen. We need to understand how we become the person that we are. Because when we start using the substance, whether it's food, sugar, or heroin, doesn't matter. It changes us in the way that we emotionally stop developing. We don't learn to deal with things life on life's turn. We just eat something or have something. And when we stop doing that, we need tools because we don't have them. So that is essential for a person that is coming from addiction, whichever addiction it is, to get tools of how am I going to deal with the personality changes that happen as a result of substance abuse. And that's what we're dealing with.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I love that so much. Do you have any, would you mind sharing? Because we talk a lot about tools on the podcast, and I think they can look different for everybody too. But will you share maybe some of your favorite tools that you have found really work for you?
Well, my favorite is learning to be, just be here and now in my body awareness. That's my basic. And I needed to really practice that. And so every time I remember, I go back to my body awareness. And when I feel I am in my body, I am more aware of what's really happening in my life, and I am grounded. And another thing that happens is that my emotions become more stable, and my mind, I can trust more what happens in my mind. If I am not body aware, then the mind obsession happens. So that's kind of a basic something for me, that if I am body aware, I am grounded, I'm here and now, and I can trust my mind, the voice that comes up in my mind, and I ask for guidance, and I always get wonderful, beautiful guidance from my inner mind. Some call it God, maybe, you know, I don't have to know what it is, I just know I need to connect to it. When I'm not body aware, again, I go into, you know, the mind obsessions. I start getting worried. What are people saying? What should I do? What should I not do? And I try to figure everything out. And so that's when I know I need to become body aware and let go and surrender.
I love that. What good advice for anyone. But it's like you said, it takes practice. It's so much harder to do, you know, or now you probably have done this a while that you have can probably get grounded pretty quickly again. But it is something that really takes practice and time.
Yes, it does. And you need to be abstinent to be able to. Really, you know, if you're just, you know, using all kinds of foods or substances, you know, it's very hard to get to that place of being.
Yeah, and that's where the abstinence is the first step, and then you build on that. So I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that. We're about out of time, so I still want to talk about, you know, part three of your story, you get yourself better. Then part two is you create this MFM program to help other people get treatment. But then when was it like, that's not enough? I need to do more.
Yeah.
What was that?
I need more to do.
What was that moment where you're like, we need more people trained
yes.
to help people? Like, so how did that kind of come to be?
Well, I always, you know, when I did my addiction counselor training, I realized that this was kind of a training or a base for anybody wanting to go into food addiction treatment and counseling. And so I cooperated with the certification boards that certify addiction counseling, and set up a program, a teaching program, the IMPACT program, in cooperation with them, with the emphasis on food addiction being the addiction. Now, then, of course, I got everybody in, you know, a lot of my colleagues to come and do this with me. They were all coming with me into this, and I kind of found it and got it going, and I run it and all of it. But, you know, I wouldn't be able to do it without the people that are there. Marty Lerner from Milestone in Recovery, Food Addiction and Eating Disorders. He's just like incredible treatment center for that. Then we, of course, Phil Verdell and Mary, who used to do ACORN, and now Amanda Leith, who runs SHIFT, which is, you know, one of the best treatment programs for food addiction, I think, in the world. I'm sorry to say, but there are others coming close at this point. And then Vera Tharman, Dr. Vera Tharman in Toronto, an MD, and she's been doing incredible things with a few of my alumni students, getting the word out, and Bitten Jonsson from Sweden. And then we got Teresa Wright, who is a dietitian with 40 years of working in the field of food addiction as a dietitian. And we have then we got those incredible scientists, Lustig and Avina, to come and do the science with us. And now we're start having a new person come in. Susan Pierce Thompson is going to come, Brightline Eating. She's going to come and teach as well at the school. So always something new happening.
And
And
that's amazing because a lot of these names you're mentioning have been on the podcast multiple times, some of them, and some of your alumni as well. So that's why, again, it's so fun to have you on today because, yeah, I feel we've been connected. I'm finally glad to get to talk and put it all together for me. So, yeah, this sounds incredible. And it's an online course. So, this is something that you don't need to live in Iceland to do, like anyone that's interested. And I'm curious, you know, of course I'm interested, but I'm also curious for people, how do you have a lot of people that kind of take the course just to further their own treatment and recovery and healing, not just, you know, I'm just curious about that, just for more information.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, the course is designed to give education to professionals that already have a profession. So they're adding on to their profession the knowledge on treating addiction, specifically food addiction. Now, anybody can come and do this, and for furthering their own knowledge and on the disease. This is not a treatment course though in itself, but it goes through what treatment is, teaches about it, and supports people that may have still problems within their abstinence and recovery, you know, what more they can do and where to go and look for support and help and all of it. And we're starting a new one in September. So go to infectschool.com if you're interested, and please do, and kind of look at it. It is a 7-month course. You can also take it in a lot for at a longer time. You don't have to take it all at once. We have like three different courses with different subjects. And everything is recorded, so if you miss a session, you can just listen on your own time. And a lot of the material is more and more for people to listen on their own time, and then come to sessions to work through questions and answers and things like that. So it was it actually has been quite a miracle. We've certified like 100 new people into this world, the certified food addiction professional. How wonderful is that? This is a new profession, and these people have a base. They can say to their clients, okay, I have a base and knowledge that is being certifiable, so that I can go, I am trusted to go and help you. And that person, so the client knows, and you know your limits within the profession as well. You know, what are your limits? You know, where do you need to refer? If you don't have what that person needs, if you know, where do you refer? Things like that is so important.
So important. And I just love, like, you know, we were kind of saying before, you probably, and I feel the same way with myself. I tried to get help for a long time, but I didn't have the diagnosis, right? So I was getting treated for binge eating disorder, which, you know, was moderation, 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 a surprise, didn't work for and I am more of a hardcore sugar addict, as you were describing. And so that's why, to me, it's really important, this work that you're doing is for people, first of all, to have the treatment centers, like you're saying, just to get their own help, but then to educate other professionals to be able to diagnose and then treat these people. And the
Yes.
more people that are doing, of course, like right now, it's still controversial, like here, like, is food addiction even real? There's no such, there's people that deny that. And to me, that's just sad because there's so many people suffering that aren't getting the help that they really need. So I really see this kind of turning, and I'm really, really excited about it because I think people are going to be able to get the right treatment so much faster without having to have the struggle that a lot of people, and you and myself and other people, have really had to experience just because help wasn't out there. And I would say even in the past few years, I just think there's so many more resources around this. So I am very, very grateful to you and all the work that you're doing because it's just finally spreading that awareness. And I just think it's going to make a huge, huge difference for so many people. So thank you.
Well,
And I will make sure we link all of your information on how to get in touch with you, your website, the InFact school information, just for anyone that wants more information, we'll have the links there. But is there anything else that, maybe we didn't get to today that you wanted to share, or just any last words of advice as well that maybe you have for people listening today?
I know one thing that it may be the last thing to say is that the Food Addiction Institute, which I am now chair of, we have been getting ready to send in applications to the APA and the World Health Organization to recognize food as a substance use disorder. And so we're in the process of that. And once that happens, I think that's when it's going to happen that people really start getting more help. So that's one thing. And I know that is going to be so important because of what you were saying, that it's controversial. It's not being set up as a diagnosable disease as of yet. We are teaching, we actually have the Yale scale, which is a diagnostic tool that has been verified, which is incredibly wonderful. And so we have some stuff to use, but we need that to happen. And so that and the last thing maybe to say is that there is a solution for food addiction. There is, and sugar addiction. And when we're willing to surrender and let go and not try to know better or try to control and just do what we're told. I'm sorry to say, of people that know what works. That's when we get recovery because, we usually, if we come to a place, where we're having a hard time and we're relapsing or something like that is happening, obviously what we're doing is not working. So find people that are doing things that works and start doing that. And I promise you that will work for you too. It's very simple, really, but you need to do it. Nobody can do it for you.
Exactly. Oh, thank you so much, Esther. It was just so wonderful talking with you today. And again, thank you for all that you're doing for this, this field. And I'm really excited just to hear that that is in process, that to get food recognized as a substance abuse disorder so that people can get the diagnosis. And that means too, insurance will pay for, these things. So it's just gonna be able to help so many more people. So thank you, thank you, thank you. I appreciate you.
Well, thank you, Shubham. You are getting the word out there, and I appreciate you for sure.
Thank you so much for listening. Have a great day. And remember, life is so much sweeter without sugar.